5-star reviews on iTunes really help us out.
Yes, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, then email that to naughtyshowpodcast@gmail.com, and we will mail you a signed postcard.
Because remember, guys, without you, it's just us talking.
Playboy Radio, it's the Naughty Show, all things comedy. We're in seventh heaven. It is the holiday season, our final two episodes, the final stretch, the end of season three. Will it be a cliffhanger
sweeps.
Like Homeland?
It's got to be sweeps, right?
Who dies?
Someone
who lives?
Dying?
Who sees season four?
Dun, dun, dun.
Questions. Big show for you guys. Big events coming up. As you guys know, tomorrow night is the finale of the third season of The Naughty Show, and we are going to have the Naughty Roast of Santa Claus, the fourth annual Naughty Roast of Santa Claus. I can't hear myself. Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay,
so
that's all that really matters. That's all that really matters.
Now, do you prefer to call it Santa or Sampta?
Well, I mean, what do you guys want to go with?
Sampta.
Sampta, for sure.
Okay.
The one that's awesome. That's the better one.
It's going to be a great show. We have a ton of people coming in, it's a variety of acts. It's going to be hilarious. I'm going to take a beating once again.
Oh, dude.
A fucking beating for drug addictions, pornography addictions. Pretty much all my vices should be lit up tomorrow like a Christmas tree.
Now, don't ruin all the punchlines.
Yeah, come on. Those are the big ones.
So I've been writing about a bunch of people. I've been fucking killing Vicky. She's going to be murdered by the time I'm done.
Oh, good to know.
There
Thanks
will be
for
death.
The heads up.
Trying to hit a couple people. I'm going to do a lot of writing tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to bang a whole bunch out, try to do a couple jokes for everybody. But as we were talking before the show, the hardest person to hit is Gareth Reynolds.
Why?
For a couple reasons.
Why don't you run through him, Sam?
You're a really nice guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to hit. And I think you're a little sensitive.
Why do you think that, though?
Vicky, do you think he's a little sensitive?
I think you're both a little sensitive.
Whoa!
That's the best answer.
How can it be sensitive?
And also, by the way, notice that your reaction was extremely sensitive.
No, it was more of shock than of sadness. I'm kind of dead on the inside, so I don't know how I could be sensitive. I've been told I'm sensitive. I don't see it.
We should call it Samsative.
Samsative?
Yeah, to stick with the Samta theme.
We're going to have dancers. We're going to have everybody. But yeah, Gareth, you're the hardest to hit. I'm going to come up with something. I'll force something. I'll make controversy.
Listen, don't. You don't feel like you have to.
Are you going to be roasting people?
I got a little something.
Okay. Yeah. I'm excited.
It'll be short.
Short and sweet, yeah. But brutal? Will there be blood?
No, it's not brutal. I don't think it's brutal.
Now, the big thing is Red Band isn't showing up.
Oh, he isn't.
So he's not coming, but I still think you should be able to roast him. Maybe we should have Lenny play Red Bam.
Is there anyone else who is not coming?
No, that's about it.
Okay.
That I think really Jeff Danis.
Yeah, Jeff
isn't
Danis,
coming.
But did you have a bunch of jokes roasting Jeff Danis?
Oh, I lit up Danis.
But Miguel Fierro is coming.
Miguel
right?
Fierro is, in fact, coming.
Okay.
He just called me. He's now available to do more shows. He got a job working at a museum. He's no longer there. So now he can hang out with porn stars again. It's very funny.
Wait, he was worried about the,
yeah.
those.
Yeah,
like
don't
the
include
mu-
my name
museum,
in this stuff.
He
still wants to show up and get creepy with porn stars, but he doesn't want any kind of credit for him.
The museum might get mad at that.
I don't understand. Yeah.
Is there a lot of crossover between this show and museums?
How do they find that out?
Is there a museum IMDb?
Yeah.
You can't put
Please
him on
Please welcome
that.
To the show a very good friend of mine. We're going to bring him in a little bit. When a guy's dressed this nice, he's got to talk about it. Please welcome one of my best friends. I've known this guy forever. He's known me since I had hope. That was a long time ago.
That was his nickname.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Sam Triple Hope.
Yeah.
Bingo.
One of my best friends and one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in show business, my good friend, Maz Jobrani.
What is up?
Woo. Maz, thanks for
Gareth,
coming in.
How dare you take my nice title?
Yeah. What? No.
You bastard.
No.
Yeah,
listen,
two of the nicest guys.
Too,
you're
so.
A prick right there. Trying to take my nice title?
How dare you call me a name? A name? Me? Of all people?
See, that's what Sam's talking about,
that's
Gareth.
What network network television needs, you know how they have like dance moms and all that stuff? It should be like Nice Off.
Yeah.
And then you put them all in one house and you see how they become the biggest jerks
yeah.
in the world.
Idea. It's a great idea.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'm totally down with that. We need more crap television. That's what we need. More crap television.
All right, good. Done.
Nice people, they don't pay anymore. Who wants to watch nice people?
That's what I'm saying. It starts out nice, but then they start backstabbing each other.
You start to do things where it starts to like rub them like a little bit more, like the challenges. Or
they'll be like you know how like they isolate you. They'll be like, "Well, Gareth said about you."
Yeah. He
said
they start lies.
Yeah,
that'd
start
be
lies.
So funny.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah. Like, well, Gareth said that you know that when you cross that when you help that lady cross the street, it really was just to gain points on the show.
And then they're like showing it like at the campfire that night. They're like, "We're going to show you a video of Moz earlier today."
I'm assuming this will be all black women because that's the best way to get a reaction out of ever. Oh, what's your? Oh, hell no! No!
The nicest black women.
Yeah, who's a nice black woman? Speaking of nice black women, I have no transition to that.
That was pretty good.
How are you, Sapphire?
Sapphire's pointing
Sapphire,
to herself.
Are you
like,
even
hey,
coming to the roast tomorrow?
I can't. I have my show tomorrow.
What's your show?
It is called Erotic City Radio, and it's also on Ustream, motherfuckers.
Oh, wow. Battle.
Yay. You want to be referred to as nice.
Yes.
God damn it.
There goes her nice
Otherwise,
prize.
I would love to come and roast the shit out of y'all.
Well, you're going to get lit up, too. So
I'm scared
even if
of
you're
that.
Not there,
I'm
even if you're not
scared.
There.
Oh, Jesus.
Speaking of loving and nice people, I was on the Huffington Post today, and I saw a really cool article. As you guys know, I own a pit bull. I love pit bulls. I have my Pollyanna at home, a.k.a. the monkey, a.k.a. the poopy, a.k.a. the joker, a.k.a. the silver bullet. All right? She's known by many names at the dog park. She is the queen. She's a little cuddle bug. Everybody loves her.
We have her on the phone?
No, she couldn't make it. Her agent said she was too busy today.
Oh, that's really fucked up.
Yeah, isn't that weird when my own dog can't do my show? But I saw this awesome article in Huffington Post. It's about this organization in Baltimore called Baltimore Bully Crew. You can go to BaltimoreBullyCrew.com. And they're doing this awesome thing called Tits for Pits. It's a fundraiser to take care of pit bulls. And when I saw the article, you know, I said I got to get them on. So please welcome the guy who runs the whole thing, putting everything together on our line, on the Moz Jabrani hotline.
Hey.
Please welcome Eric Volk, everybody. Eric, are you there? Eric?
Did you press the button?
Oh, shit. Eric, are you there?
I'm here.
Boom. Yay. Welcome to my professional show.
Right on. Nice to be here, guys. Thank you for having us.
Eric, thank you for staying up so late to come on the show, and I appreciate you calling right in. Pits for Tits. Let's talk about your organization, how it got started. I love it. I'm a huge pit bull lover.
Man.
That sounded weird, but I am.
We are a grassroots organization based out of Baltimore, Maryland. We are a pit bull rescue, education, and adversary organization. We started the organization about almost 4 years ago. My wife and I rescued our very first pit bull, to which we had for 10 years and just lost her this year. She was inspiration for us to really, we don't have children, and we embrace these animals as if they're family members to us, so we wanted to protect them like anyone would protect their children. With such discrimination going on and the state of controversy and breed-specific legislation and just the animals being so exploited and fought and bred, and there's just such a need for somebody that would stand up and take a direct street approach to education and adversary.
Let me ask you something. Now, is Baltimore, all I know about Baltimore is from The Wire. Am I assuming that there's a big pit bull problem in Baltimore?
There is. It's what you see on The Wire is true to life in some sections of Baltimore, and there's also wonderful sections of Baltimore.
Of course,
there is. City like any city, but yes, we do have a huge pit bull overpopulation as well as a large dogfighting epidemic in the cities of Baltimore and surrounding counties.
Most people, when you start talking about pit bulls, the average person starts freaking out. Because, you know, they see all the news, and, you know, the news, nothing, you know, if you say a Dalmatian attacks somebody, that doesn't get a lot of, you know, traction. But pit bulls, people love to go crazy on that. And what I found from pit bulls, not just my own, but going to dog parks, is that they really are little lovers. They cuddle. They all, like, they could be the biggest pit bull in the world, and they all think they're little lap dogs.
the personality of the dogs is amazing. I mean, they have almost human personalities at times. If my dogs, they know everything. They know when I'm sad, when I'm happy, when I'm confused, when I... And they feed off a human emotion, and they're so attached to their humans. Unfortunately, those beautiful traits of the animal are exploited and used against them, and people use that loyalty for their own personal gains, which they're not really looking out for the animal by any means. They're almost loyal to a fault. I mean, these dogs are just, I've been rescuing for professionally, if you want to call it that, with an organization for 4 years. I've handled dogs out of pretty much every situation, from dogs that ended up in the shelter, dogs we've pulled off the street, dogs that people surrendered, dogs that we've got that have came out of dog fighting rings. And honestly, I've never been bit by a pit bull type
dog. My God, I can't. How does somebody do that? How does somebody dog fight? I mean, how do you love a dog and then throw it in there and just let it get its ass kicked or let it kill something else?
You love them. I mean, it's money-driven. It's a money-driven industry. It's a billion-dollar industry in this country.
Oh, my God. That's so horrible. Now, let's talk about this amazing event you did, because I think it's
tits for pits.
Tits for pits. How'd you guys come up with this awesome idea?
We're a real grassroots rescue. The rescue started my wife, Catherine, and myself, and a bunch of our close-knit friends that we've grown up with that have pit bulls, love the breed, supported the breed. We kind of got together when we developed the rescue, and we didn't want to start a rescue and then build some persona that's flowery or that's not us. We didn't want any gimmicks. We just wanted to keep the rescue real to our personalities and what we like to do. And we're sitting there when we conceived the idea, we wanted to put a fundraiser together that what would we like to go to and spend our money and help dogs versus go somewhere, spend the money, you know, do what you do and then go home and go, yeah, that was fun and that was it. Like,
that's phenomenal.
Everybody has fun at the strip club. Everybody loves tits.
Now, was there any resistance to using a strip bar like that? I mean, like, because I've done shows where it's like, I do a show called The Naughty Show, and we raise money to help, you know, sex trafficking, because it's a really bad issue, especially on the West Coast. And a lot of the people who came to the show got really angry at us because they thought it was, you know, sexist and exploitive. Was there any resistance to doing an event?
We fought tooth and nail for this event. We put it out on Facebook, which we had great success, and we started gaining traction, and we started seeing the number go up, and we're sitting here. At this point, we're a new rescue. We really haven't been around. People don't really know us, and we're watching our numbers go up, like 80 people, 100 people, 120. We're going, holy shit, I think we're onto something here.
That's awesome.
And we got up to about 160 people, and there were other rescues that were local that had a huge problem with it. They thought it was derogatory towards women and degrading, and how can my wife, as the co-founder of the organization, support something as a woman that degrades women? And they actually reported the event to Facebook, and Facebook took down our event page.
What?
Oh, that's insane.
Bullshit.
That is bullshit.
It was a catty rescue. No pun intended.
Jesus Christ.
So
what's the chances these chicks...
Me and being who we are, they're not going to do this to me. This is for my dog, so... We reintroduced the event as Boobs for Bullies.
Yeah.
Well, they went after that one, so the event became Nipples for Pitbulls. And I was ready to fire on all cylinders. Whatever they threw at me, I had something to come back with. So after a while, they just kind of, they left it alone, and the event went off. We brought 160 people to a titty bar, and we killed it. We made, I think, almost $4,000.
Wow.
That's awesome, man. Now, how do the strippers take to this? Are they into it? Are they not into it? Is it weird that they got to share their tips, or what's the story?
They love it. The majority of the entertainers that worked at the club owned pit bulls, so there was a personal connection between the event and their career and their dogs, and they embraced it. We talked to a bunch of clubs at first, and some of them just they saw it as financial. They didn't see the cause. They didn't appreciate or respect it. So we opted to go with the Gentleman's Gold Club in Baltimore, they opened us with, like, they welcomed us with open arms. They were so responsive, and they just had such a gratitude for our organization and our cause. They promoted, they helped us to, I mean, they got prizes for us to auction. They were just amazing.
That is phenomenal. Now, one thing you're trying to do before we got jammed
is rescue some of these strippers, right?
Yes. Yeah. Can we? No. One thing you're definitely trying to do, you're trying to build a sanctuary for animals that maybe can't be adopted because, you know, there's a little too much damage going on there, and you want just where they could, like, live out their regular life. Is that something
you... Super brief about it. We found a piece of property that is 20 acres. It is turnkey for our operation. Our goal there is, with the breed-specific legislation in Maryland, is to offer something to the community. A lot of people are being approached by their landlords, being threatened. You have 30 days to get rid of the dog.
I hate that. That happened to me, man.
And really? You know what? I want to be. We want to be the organization that says, you know what? The hell with this guy. Bring your dog here, and we'll take care of it for you while you seek other living situations. Then we return your dog to you at no charge.
That's wow. Awesome, Matt. Hey, so
we're
you're
trying to be a bridge.
You're an amazing dude, Eric. I really appreciate you calling in, especially at such short notice. Now, it's BaltimoreBullyCrew.com. The event is Saturday, March 1st. It's at the Gold Club at 5801 Polinski Drive. Check it out. We'll call you maybe closer to the event. We'll do a big push for you guys again. And awesome. We'd love to help in any way. And, Eric, I can't thank you for not only just calling in, but for doing this, man, and helping out Pitbulls.
Hey, it's all for the dogs. It's all for a common cause, brother. It's all good, man.
All right, man. We appreciate you calling in. I know it's late there.
Page on Facebook, too.
Where's what? It's Baltimore Bully Crew?
4th annual Tits for Pits.
All right, man. We'll check it out. We'll blast it on my Twitter, our Twitter, and on our website. Thanks for calling in, Eric. We really appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work, brother. We'll talk to you
all
soon.
All right, bro.
Take care.
Thanks.
That was awesome. That's aww. What it's about. I love doing that stuff. Only yeah. The Naughty Show could talk about
making
tits
a difference,
for pits.
Yeah.
You guys are really quiet during that whole thing.
Well, what
letting you do it. Letting you do your
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you're having we're being nice.
No.
Well, I was listening. When you were saying how pit bulls are misunderstood and they're misrepresented in the media, I was thinking that's kind of like Muslims. So pit bulls are the Muslims of the dog world.
They really are, man.
They are. The Khalid Sheikh Mohammeds.
I was talking to someone today that, you know, he doesn't have a pit bull. He has his dog, and it's bitten like one or two people in his neighborhood, and he mm-hmm. feels really bad. But I'm like, you know, that's also not a bad thing. As long as there's no blood, a little nipple gets you a little street cred so nobody fucks with your house anymore.
He had a pit bull as well?
Well, he had a pit bull mix.
Well, what you got to do, since you got a pit bull and you're trying to make it so that it's better for pit bulls, you got to start trying to get other people's dogs that aren't pit bulls to bite people.
Oh, great.
And then you got to tweet that. Be like, I just saw a chihuahua
yeah.
bite some.
We need to get rid of these dogs.
And I got to get chihuahuas in the rap video.
Turn that shit around.
That's
the
key.
I wonder if like chihuahuas are like the, you know how like white people are serial killers always?
Yeah.
So I wonder if like chihuahuas are the serial killers. You got to give them all.
Like a lot of owners are just being randomly poisoned. They're like, how did he die?
Does he have a chihuahua?
This is yeah. so
anthrax?
Yeah. Yeah. He's killed. He's lived with 10 people and they've all died.
That'd be some scary shit.
Yeah.
Serial chihuahua killer.
So he's the cute little ones or the little Pomeranians.
Oh, yeah.
Those ones are the motherfuckers.
He would be like, oh, he seemed normal next door. He was fine.
It's always the little dogs, too, that want to fight everybody, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's never the big dog. Big dogs. Chihuahuas and like Pomeranians are like drunk chicks at the bar, where it's always the little drunk chick that wants to throw on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's the big chicks just hanging out trying to hope somebody hits on her.
Yeah.
It's the little one with the big cans that's just swinging on everybody.
Because they get drunk faster.
They get drunk faster and like, you know, as guys, like, there's growing up, there's always a threat of somebody punching you in the face.
Yeah.
Chicks, it doesn't happen as much. It happens here and there. I'm sure that, you know, there's obviously stories of girls fighting, but.
Sure.
But, you know, it's like yeah. nobody's ever, like, walked up and just clocked a chick.
We also got to think that, like, little girls that are that skinny, probably their metabolism's going faster. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if they went home, they probably couldn't sleep.
Yeah, it's their own beer goggles.
The big girl's about to fall asleep, man. She's had a long night.
The girl,
She's like,
she's been carrying all those, all that weight around.
Man, I've been here.
She's like a T-Rex. She's just tired.
I don't want to sleep. I don't
I've been
fight.
Walking too much.
We should just get food. Yeah. Maybe we'll just get some food, go home.
Meanwhile, Morgan Fairchild over there. Let's go. Let's go. Calm down, Morgan Fairchild.
The Maz Jobrani, one of the funniest dudes I know. You and I have been friends for about like 13, 14
yeah,
years.
Yeah, long time.
Your family is awesome.
Thanks,
I love everything about you.
As well as your family.
Yeah, I think you met my brother.
I met your brother.
Oh,
your
you
dad.
Did meet my dad.
Yeah, I came
okay,
to
we
shows.
Got great stories to talk about.
Yeah.
But I met you when we were first all starting to do comedy.
Yeah.
And I was running a show at the Crooked Bar.
Crooked Bar, was it Coconut Teasers? Is that what
Coconut
that was?
Teaser, which was this great rock club.
Yeah.
Before it got turned into like some nightclub.
Louis the 14th or
that
something.
That lasted for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It must be so weird to build a business and just know it's gone and like 3 weeks.
You know what's weirder for me is like talking about these places and like and they still seem like it was just last week. And
yes.
Then you talk to people and you realize that like you're getting older.
Yes.
And people are like, what? Coconut Teasers? What are you talking? You're like, you know the club that was on the nah.
Nobody knows about
and then you go to the next one. It was called Louis XIV. Like, nah.
They don't even know about that one.
They don't know crap.
I do the same thing with Dublin's, but we'll get into that in a few.
Yeah.
So anyways, you come to my show. We just met. We are kind of both hanging out, sort of trying to get picked up. I think you just gotten picked up.
Yeah.
You got picked up about a year before I did.
Picked up meaning becoming regular. Became
regular.
For those
the
who don't
Mitzi
understand
show.
What that means. But yes. It doesn't mean I was just picked up.
Yeah. You were a prostitute working the streets.
I got picked up.
And
I
your
got
Persian
picked up
ass
a lot.
Was on fire.
Oh, my God. I was hot. And fuego.
Oh, yes.
Listen, no one could touch me between Crescent and La Cienega. Yeah. That was my shit.
Yeah, that was your house.
That was my house.
So, you know, when you're
Mercedes-Benz only, bitch.
Maz Jobrani, great stories. So he, I booked you on a show.
Yes, I remember that.
And you brought your mother.
My mother and her friend came downstairs to the Crooked Bar. And that was one of those times where, like, we were, that was still when you're doing, like, basically it was like bringer shows and open mic stuff. And it wasn't like, oh, you know, here's a theater show. I think the place had like 8 seats.
Yeah, it was a real shithole.
Yeah, and it was like you know, it was a downstairs. Like nobody cared. I don't know how people get that. Like, did you just go to the management and you go, hey, I'm going to bring 20 people on a Sunday?
No, they had actually, I was doing the open mic for a while there, and they approached me about doing my own show.
Right. So it's interesting how like some places just get comedy, because I think the management's like, oh, that's what we need. If we get comedy on a Sunday.
Hold on. We can get a night of entertainment, not pay anybody.
Not pay anybody. Give them just like a basket of chicken wings.
Yeah. A couple drinks. There was a time where my complete salary was drink tickets.
Yeah.
Right? I was pulling in about 8,000 drink tickets a year when I first started.
Put a few away for your 401k.
Yeah. So you bring your parents, and, you know, I was who I was back then, even then.
Yeah. You had, like, didn't you have long hair at that point?
Yes. You met me when I had hair down to about my my top tit.
Yeah.
And I look like a Jewish Chris Cornell.
Yes.
This long flowing hair and this fucking honker.
Chris Cornish.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Chris Cornorberg. So you brought your mom down, and I was really filthy.
Yeah. Of course.
Especially filthy.
You were?
Yeah. Very filthy.
Especially filthy?
Oh, yeah. I'm not way dirtier. It just seems like I was dirtier back then.
But I also think that starting out, like, you're finding where you want to be, and you sometimes think that you need to be dirtier to find it. Even like, I think I saw one time, I forget who it was. So one of the comics was, like, trying out new material who doesn't cuss that much. And I think I was sitting next to... Was it Bill Burr? Somebody was sitting next to me at the factory, and they're like, oh, this is new material because he's cussing a lot more than he normally does.
All I do is say F-words when I'm doing new material.
Yeah.
Just F-word after F-word.
I like how you won't say fuck right now because your mind's in, like, sensor mode.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Say fuck.
Yeah,
the F-word.
Yeah.
Okay, good point. Point, Gareth.
So,
point.
Yeah, so you were cussing away.
I was cussing away in front of your mother.
Yeah, I remember that. And then you introduced me. I think you messed up my name, even though, like, we kind of knew each other. We were just getting to know it. And also, my name, Maz Jobrani, is not like Mike Smith.
Yes.
You know, it's Maz Jobrani. So a lot of times people say Maz or Jabroni. They're all over the place. So I think my mom had come to see, like, a show, and you know, like you said something like, you know, Maz jabroed me. So I forget what you said.
And that was the story of Maz and I's relationship.
But what's funny, too, is that, like, your mother there, like, when your mother's there, she's probably protective. She doesn't understand that, Mom, this is what you got to do. Like, Mom, you picked the wrong show to come to.
Yes. Did you invite her? Or did she want to come down?
I don't remember. I think she wanted, maybe she was like, oh, I want to come see a show with a friend. And it was like, it's kind of like your mom coming to the gym to watch you. You know, sweat.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're like, what do you do? You know, and so then somebody says Maz Jabroni. And I'm sure she's like, that's my son. It's Maz Jabroni. You got it wrong. You know, you're like, just
your
take it easy.
Mother, I can't believe she. But that was the story of me doing these shows with you. Which, like, you would always, because I was half Armenian. Well, we were very good friends, so we'd always work together.
Yeah.
And you'd always bring me into these very conservative shows.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was completely batshit crazy on stage.
Yeah.
Just like, it was like wrong hole.
No, I like that. I actually like pushing, because what happened was when I first started doing stand-up, we would just do, like, you know, late nights comedy store. So who knows who's there? You're just doing your stuff. Right. Then eventually, like, as we started doing these theme shows that Mitzi Shore started putting together.
Which was, like, she was the one who kind of saw this vision before everybody else did of an all Middle Eastern show.
And this is what happened. So here's the story of how. So I'd become a regular. I was the only Middle Eastern comic at the Comedy Store. And when I say Middle Eastern,
I'm
American.
Some might say in the country at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm American, but a Middle Eastern background.
Right.
And then Mitzi's watching TV in the year 2000, and there's the latest uprising between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And she goes, there's going to be a need for a positive voice for Middle Easterners. Now, Tripoli had been in front of Mitzi. You got to get in front of Mitzi to become a regular. You've been in front of her a few times, and she'd said, no, you're not going to become a regular. This is a few times. So then Duncan, who's our buddy Duncan Trussell, was the booker at the time.
Yes.
And I said to Duncan, Duncan goes, do you know any Middle Eastern people that we could add to this show? We want to do a night of Middle Eastern comedy, and you're the only guy we got. And I'm like, a year
no
in.
Pressure.
I'm like, I can't do a whole night. So then I was like, you know what? There was Aaron Cater, who I'd seen perform one time at Haha, and I said, I think he's half Palestinian. I didn't know him yet.
Yes.
They had Mitzi seen Ahmed Ahmed at Jay Davis's rock comedy in the main room. So she had brought him in. So it was me and I started meeting Ahmed at that point. And then Duncan, obviously you and I were friends. I go, Duncan, I go, do you know if Tripoli? I go, Tripoli's half Armenian. Does that count?
Yeah.
And no, I'm sorry. I said Tripoli. And I said, last name's Tripoli, which is the capital of Libya. I go, that's got to be something. So I called you up. I'm like, dude, do you have any Middle Eastern in you? And you're like, I'm half Armenian. I go, I think that's going to work.
Close.
So we called up, and Mitzi didn't care. Like, anybody who was brown that wasn't Mexican or black was on our show. We had Indians. We had Armenians. We had white girls that did really, like, bad belly dancing, like, they weren't real belly dancers. Like, they were doing, like, bad impressions of belly dancers.
Then they tried to push Goldie onto us. Like,
Golden Turkish. Well, the funny thing was, there was this, I don't even remember. There was a, thanks, man. There was, no, this is classy.
Yeah, dude. Look at my place.
Hugh Hefner, baby. There was that girl, Lemaire, who used to do Mitzi's hair. I think they got her into the first one as our belly dancer. But she wasn't a belly. She was a comedian. And so she put on, like, this veil. It was borderline racist. It probably was racist.
Yeah.
She put on, like, this veil, and she would come out to, like, and it wasn't even funny.
Oh,
she would, like, take her face out and, like stick her tongue in me like that and put it back in. And she, like, show an ankle. It was just really bad.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I think at one point I was like, listen, man, if we're going to do this shit, let's get, like, a real belly dancer or something. And we got one. A friend of mine was married to this girl who did belly dancing. She showed up with a snake on one of the shows.
Now, when you start doing comedy, you're always at the mercy of the comedy club owner who loves to make suggestions on how you can make your act better.
Yes.
And Mitzi's was, she wanted to go straight up genie on stage, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. Now, Mitzi, so here's the thing. So for people that don't know how it works, what you do is you go, you do 3 minutes in front of Mitzi. Now, Mitzi's the guru. She's the god. Imagine, this is Playboy TV, imagine Hugh Hefner that said, I will come watch you, hot girl, and if I like you, I will anoint you, and you will become a playmate. So you go there, you do your 3 minutes. If she likes you, you do 6 minutes. If she likes you, you do 10 minutes. You got to come back 3 weeks in a row. So I've been going through the process, Finally, did the 10 minutes, and it's on Sunday, which is a horrible night because it's a weird crowd, open mic night. So I finish, and then she sits in the back like the Godfather, right where the exit is. You got to walk past her.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole time you're like, please just grab my hand, grab my hand. If she doesn't grab your hand, you walk past, you're done.
Right.
If she grabs your hand, you're in. She grabs my hand, and it was like, it felt like a year. It was like, I was like, oh, my God. It's happening. And she pulled me in close. I was like, holy shit, it's happening. And she goes, you're very funny. I was like, oh, my God, this is about to happen. I go, thank you, Mitzi. And she goes, I'm going to make you a regular. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, thank you, Mitzi. Like, this, I've been dying for this. It's amazing. Oh, my God, the best thing ever in my career. And she goes, have you thought about wearing the outfit? And I go, what outfit? And she goes, you know, the hat and the jacket, the coat, and the whatever. I go, the hat and the coat. She's like, you know, the hat and the gown. I was like, oh, you mean like a turban? She's like, yeah.
What?
And I was like, I go, yeah, sure, I'll wear that. I said yes because I was like,
at that point, yes to anything.
At that point, yes. She could have, whatever she wanted.
Whatever it takes to get in the door, yes.
You are in, I'm going to do whatever. And at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, she's older now, she's going to forget.
Yeah.
Because this was Sunday night. And I go, by Monday, she's not going to remember me. She's anointing a few people. She's not going to even remember this shit. So then I get a call the next day. By Corey, who was the booker then. Princess Corey. And she calls me up, and I knew her from doing the club. You know, you do the club's got three rooms, and I used to do the other two rooms. So I'd been hanging out for a while, so I knew people there. Corey calls up, Moss, congratulations. Mitzi told me you've been made a regular. I go, yeah, I'm so excited. And here I am. I'm at my day job at an ad agency working as an assistant. So this is, like, big for me, like, you know. And I go, yeah. And she goes, and she said you're going to wear the outfit.
I can't.
Oh my God. I go, Corey, listen. Hey. I go, yeah, I know. She remembered? She's like, yeah. I'm so excited. I go, oh, Corey. I go, Corey, let me ask you a question. I go, listen, you know, off the books here. Listen, I'm not too comfortable wearing an outfit. Like, this is probably, I don't know if this is good for my career to come up with a turban.
Like, be a wrestler stand up.
Yeah, like.
That's like asking a black hom to go up with, like, in a Harlem Globetrotters outfit with a basketball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to refer to it as the outfit.
The outfit.
As if, like, everyone should just get what that means.
Yeah, like doing like a Mexican. Why do you go up as a gangbanger?
It's like asking me to go up in like a yellow cab outfit. Just like I drive taxis.
Yeah, that's your character.
I drive you LAX.
And you do all jokes about cab driving.
Yeah. Have you thought about doing it like you're driving the audience in your cab?
Yeah, yeah.
Talking to them like that, like it's all small
talk.
Put
on your seatbelts. Heater's on.
I sit with my back to the audience.
Exactly, you just turn around to talk to them.
Where are you guys from?
You have cash? No credit card. Cash, please. It's better for me.
I mean, it works, but it takes so long. Come on.
Please, cash, please. So here I am. So she says yes. So I tell Corey. I go, listen, Corey. Blah blah blah. I go, Corey, what if I don't wear it? What's gonna happen? She goes, listen, I'll tell you this right now. I go, will I still get spots? She goes, Maz, you're not gonna get the spots. You know. And she goes, furthermore, let me just tell you, Mitzi was instrumental in the careers of a lot of people. She goes, she actually went shopping with Roseanne to help her create her character. Mitzi's a genius. She sees things. You should trust in that. And I was like, all right. And then I go, well, what if I like did? I go, listen, Corey, at the time I was like, listen, I was thinking of doing this like bit where I was kind of inspired by Eddie Murphy doing Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. I wanted to do a little bit like Mr. Raheem's Neighborhood or something. And I was like, what if I got this thing and maybe in the middle of the act I become this guy? And she's like, okay, why don't you come down? We'll talk about it. So I go down, I start talking to her. And, you know, Rudolph Valentino used to be the prince. If, you know, like he was the sheikh. He was the sheikh. So and Corey was a big fan of like movies of that era. So she had all these books around.
Right.
I'm looking at it. I'm like, I got it. I go, what if I become like halfway through the thing? I become the sheikh. Like he's kind of a positive. He's not the turban dude. He's the sheikh. He's like a lover. I go, what if I do something like this? He's like, I love it. I'm going to tell Mitzi you're going to be the sheikh. She's going to love it. And I walk out going like, holy shit, I just negotiated something I did not want to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I walk out, I'm like, oh my. So now I'm like looking for an out. I'm like, what is my out? How do I get out of this? Like, this is a total quagmire, dare I say. Because,
well done.
Right? Because it's like, I'm stuck in this. How do I? Because I want the spots, and this is good for my career, but I also feel like this is not what I want, you know? And then I start thinking about it. I'm talking to my sister about it a little bit. At the time, my father was living in Iran. And there'd been some guy, like, there now, the mullahs in Iran, there'd been a dude who on Persian television used to, like, impersonate the mullahs. And he would, like, cuss them out. He was very political. And supposedly, I don't know who the guy is, but supposedly he was at some live event here in Westwood at, like, a rally. And one of the mullah supporters was there, and the guy threw a rock and blinded the guy.
What?
Yeah. So I pulled that
out.
That's
a rough crowd.
I go, Corey, listen, I'm getting ready to – I'm getting ready to put on the turban and get going. I'm ready. I'm getting ready.
Sir, are you a mullah?
I was like – we're all related to – no, I'm kidding. She's about to pray to Mecca right now. Anyway.
It's so weird. We have porn stars in it. I know her. She just starts bowing. Yeah. They're like, what is she doing? Yeah.
No, so so then I call them. I go, listen, I'm totally on board. I really want to do this. And I've been shopping. I'm ready to go. But I go, you know, my father lives in Iran. And if word gets out that I'm doing this thing – it could put him in danger. Furthermore, I say, if word gets out there's a guy at the comedy store doing this thing, the comedy store could be in danger.
Oh, well played,
I go,
Masha
some dude
Brani.
Could blow this shit up. Instantly, they're like, she goes, let me call you back. I'll call you right back. Fix me up. Calls me back 5 minutes later. You don't need to wear the turban. Don't
throw out the outfit. Wow. Throw away the outfit.
Forget it. No outfit. And here's what's crazy. So she put us together, Axis of Evil. The thing starts taking off, starts doing well. And this is like maybe 2 years later. Now I'm thinking like she's definitely forgotten about this. Now we're on her good
now
side.
Now it's years later
yeah,
at this
2 years.
Point.
She's like loves us now. This thing's starting to take off. And we're in La Jolla doing it. And she sits across from us and she's talking to all of us and stuff. And then she turns to me and she kind of smiles. She goes, you were supposed to wear the outfit. And I was like, yeah, Mitzi.
She was smart, dude. Axis of Evil show. It was called the...
Arabian Nights originally.
That's at first, and then it became the Axis of Evil, and they were some of the funnest shows I ever did.
They were fun, right?
They were so much fun. And here's the thing. I would always do this show, right? And it was crazy because, you know, especially the Persian community, they're really fun. You know, there's this whole notion that they're very serious. They would party. You know,
party
I
hard.
Mean, we they would when Maz came to town, it was an event. That's all I remember. Everywhere we went with you, it was an event.
Like, bring out the vodka and the tequila, baby.
Bust out. I mean, did I already tell the story about us in Arizona? Have I told the story about Maz's gig in Arizona?
I don't think so.
Just, I mean, like, Maz would show up, and it was like, literally, I called him Pelvis, the Persian Elvis, right? Yeah. Yeah. Because he would show up to town, and the Persian community would go crazy. Like, anytime I meet a Persian, I swear to God, I go, hey, do you know Maz Jobrani? Yes, I do it. I go, he's a very good friend of mine. No way. I work it with everybody. You and Russell Peters. I meet Indians, I drop Russell Peters.
That's funny.
So we would show up, and these guys showed up one time in, like, phantoms. Like, these giant white phantoms. These gorgeous cars to drive us around. They offered it.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. You know what it is? First of all, there's two things going on. One is, so we did all those shows, and it was all like comedy fans and young people, right? And then eventually what happened was they started bringing their parents.
Oh, yeah. That's the weirdest thing.
That's where Triple E's material started not working. So, you know. But I'll tell you, he got me too one time because he did an Armenian event one time. I don't remember. He did an Armenian event at the comedy
store.
This is
when Steve Byrne had first moved out to L.A.
Had just moved out, and we did this Armenian event at the comedy store. Main room on a Sunday night fundraiser, and it's just great crowd. And then Triple E goes, they love you, man. He goes, they got another event at the Hilton in Burbank or something, and they want you and Steve Byrne to go do it. And I show up, and I'm telling you, it was like
fresh off the boat.
Those people's grandparents were there. It was like 50 and older. I mean, there was like a priest in the front. Like, I did a joke that was a religious joke.
No.
It wasn't like religion against any kind of religion, but it was like, it just mentioned. I mean, I'm up there just eating it. And I was like, oh, my God. And then Byrne went up, and Byrne was eating it. And Byrne wanted redemption. He was kept going. And they were, like, giving him the light. And they're like, and he kept going. And then the organizer comes in and like, get him off stage.
I can turn this around.
Get off.
Yeah. Maz, you know what's so funny about that is, like, literally the Armenian community has what we're seeing now is the next generation of Armenians starting to grow up, and they're more Americanized.
Yeah, yeah.
But when these guys come straight from Armenia – they don't understand sarcasm.
Oh, dude, this is what you. I realized this because I get people now. Because I grew up in America, so and stand up is an American art form in many ways, and there's a rhythm to it, you know, and it's what we know, what you're comfortable with.
Like, yes,
you could go on stage and mess around and throw subjects and go, let's try this, and you do whatever. Like, hey, let's improvise. You go for it. But it once you go, like, and I speak Farsi fluently, but people sometimes tell me, like, they'll come, like, they'll bring their grandparents and be like, why do you do some jokes in Farsi? And I go, listen, I don't do jokes. It's stand-up. I'm talking about my life.
Yes.
And the problem here, I'll tell you the problem exactly, is what you just said. Sarcasm doesn't exist in a lot of other cultures.
Yes, they take it literal.
Literal. So whereas in America, you could be on stage and be like, yeah, you know, so I was at the bar and everyone had left and it was just me and this 13-year-old boy. Anyway, I'm banging him, right? So the audience is like, oh, ha, 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 he's making it. Where our culture would be like, what? He fucked a 13-year-old boy?
Get him!
This is not right.
No, this is very bad.
Yeah, if people don't know about it, that's okay. But, I mean, you should not come on stage.
Dude, very funny, dude.
That's the truth, though.
And the thing that was so great about Maz's gigs, he would fly me, you know, right now, at this point, I don't feature for anybody. I've been headlining. I almost went right to headliner. I pretty much went right to headliner. There's very few people I'd feature for. And the two people are Joe Rogan and Maz Gibrani, because they are the best gigs ever. And I always go to these gigs, and it's always like these crazy, like, cultural, rich people seeing comedy. And I have so much fun. But you go to the after party, and it's a giant party. But it's not like a normal gig where it's like you go to a party and there's people wanting to party with the comedians. Well, they want to party, but there's no real hooking up after, because the community is very close-knit, so word doesn't want to get out. But always there's this one crazy white girl that always shows up to the club. There's always like one outsider that's down to do something. Yeah. Every time I go there, it was like it's either some Puerto Rican, some white girl. Some white girl was fighting with me the whole time when we did Washington, D.C. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I vaguely
me
remember
and
that.
Me, this white girl, just when I got off stage, she was just in my face. You're sexist. You're racist. She's arguing at me. And the whole night I'm drinking. By the end of the night, I find out I went home with her. I woke up. My suit's completely ripped. My computer smashed. I don't know what the hell happened in my room. But this chick had come home and totally fucking fucked around with me.
Hilarious.
It was hilarious.
You've had a few run-ins like that. One time when we did La Jolla, we were doing it, and there was these two rich women that had nothing to do with Persia. They were like two La Jolla white rich ladies.
Crazy rich
chick. Who just were talking the whole show. At one point, they were talking so much, I think I was closing the show. I literally stopped the show, and I went to one of them and said, hey, come with me for a second. I brought her on the stage. I sat her on the stool. I said, I want you to look out at the audience. I said, I want you to wait to the other one. I said, you wait till the show's over. She's coming back, but don't talk. And they kept talking. And I was like, these bitches are crazy.
La Jolla.
Yeah, that's. And then after the show, we're hanging out at like in front of the door, and then somehow Tripoli, you'd been talking to them, and they rolled up in like a Rolls Royce, the two girls, and they're like, get in. And Tripoli jumps in, and he's off.
Yeah.
And we're like, where'd he go?
And I was going to totally try to bone them till they told me that their husbands own casinos in Vegas. I'm like, okay, this is mob shit.
Yeah.
And I'm about to die.
Yeah.
But that's just La Jolla. La Jolla Comedy Show Club is the richest, most ghetto club you'll ever play. Like,
yes.
The people are, they're so rich, but they love acting like bourgeois trash. You're right.
You know what it is? It's that San Diego shorts culture. You know what I'm saying? It's like, when you go to San Diego feels like, even when you're not around San Diego State or one of the universities, it feels like everyone is a college student.
Yes.
And some of them are 50-year-olds. But it feels like everyone is, every part of San Diego you go to downtown, you go to La Jolla, there's dudes in shorts who are probably like multimillionaires. And exactly what you said, it's not like, because some other city, like you go to New York, it's cold, they'll dress up,
yeah.
they'll look
it's
nice to show up. Yeah, they're going to show up at the event. You're like, oh, that guy's probably a Wall Street guy.
Yeah.
You know, over in La Jolla, you're like, oh, that dude, I want to give him $5. Meanwhile, he owns Oracle or some shit.
So I did this show. I was out there with a very funny Adam Wright, really funny. Rocco, my buddy, really funny. It was a great show. So I'm doing this show, and I could just read the crowd. And there was this crowd in there of this couple. And La Jolla is full of swingers. It's just like when you get that rich, you just want to watch weird shit done to your wife. It's just a weird thing. You want to watch weird shit get shoved into your wife. That's just how it is when you're that rich. You just see what you can get away with.
Sure.
So I'm doing stand-up, rocking it, crushing, having a great – I mean, just racking people – And I feel thanks to like Comedy Central that comedy has finally caught up to me. Mm-hmm. Like what I've been doing for like 16 years is finally people understand it. It's not like a giant sledgehammer when I drop my jokes. They're like, yeah. You know, it's not just the sick fucks in the room that get it. Now, like, it's commonplace, which is fun. So anyways, I had a great weekend. I look over there and there is this couple. They had to be in their 50s. She's very attractive. But they have that total like magician, like white leopard print in all their house vibe to them. Right. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Like just they have white leopard everywhere in their house.
Yeah.
And they have their couches are white leopard with plastic on top of it.
Yeah.
She's like hot, but she kind of looked like if you took a zombie and a porn star and put them into one.
Well, that sounds hot.
And they're like, dick, yeah. I need dick.
Yeah.
Was that a zombie or a gay man? I don't know.
A couple of cuckoos, man.
Both, maybe.
So anyways, afterwards they come up to me and I'm like, they're like, hey, great show. Can I take a picture with you? I'm like, sure. And the woman comes up to me. She goes, what are you doing after the show?
Oh, boy.
I'm like, what? You want to come back to our place?
Our place.
And yep. What?
You like leopard prints? Not jizz on our leopards?
Don't jizz on the fabric.
What? You didn't jizz on the fabric, did you?
Yeah. So basically, this guy wanted me to bang his wife after the show.
So what happened?
Yeah, so when you did, what happened?
I didn't bang her.
So at this point, at the Armenian show, they'd be like, what? You did what?
Why you want him to bang white leopard?
Why you want bang leopard?
Bang white leopard. So wrong. So badly wrong. Yeah, so that's my story. It was a
no,
fun
it's
time.
Crazy. Comedies are crazy, and you and I have had some great times, and it's kind of sad in a way. You know what? It's perfect because I think that you and I, it's kind of like, it's like going through high school and you go, that's my best friend, you know, and then you go to college and you don't see your best friend as much, but then when you see him, you have a great time.
Yeah,
and we're both busy with some. And I remember telling you actually early on, I was like the same way like people used to say to like Larry David, they're like, your thing is specific and it will be, then they will find you. I remember saying that to you too. I was like, this is your world, and it's like you're doing it now. It's like you're living in the, you're not trying to squeeze yourself into, you know, church shows.
Right. Yeah.
Although we'd love to see a try.
That would be awesome.
That would be great if
you
could give it a whirl.
That should be a show. Ken, Sam, Rock in this room. And you just send me to the worst rooms ever and see if I can get blood from a stone.
That's the best web series ever, and we should totally make that. Maybe stop talking about it. Because I would love that.
What about the time you said that you were doing a bar in like Modesto or something, and while you were on stage, the Lakers proceeded to have the biggest comeback in NBA history.
Yeah, we were talking with Brett Ernst about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really funny thing. Brett came on the show last week, 2 weeks, how long, like a month?
A couple months ago, but still. Everything's fine for you.
Yeah.
That's what matters. Brett came on, what was he on, yesterday? A year and a half ago? Okay, cool. I'm going to WebMD this.
That's like my daughter. My daughter does that. I have a 2 and a half, well, she's going to be 3 soon. And it's funny, she has no idea of what timing is. So everything is yesterday.
Yeah.
So like something that could have happened a year ago, she's like, yesterday. And I'm like, oh, baby.
You know, and it's like when someone goes, hey, you know, did you see what your boy did yesterday? I'm like, who's my boy?
Yeah.
Barack Obama. Hold on. That guy's my boy? He's got my fucking boy.
Yeah.
Black comics always do that to me. Yeah. Yo, your boy fucked up.
Your boy fucked up.
Chris Paul, bro. Fucked. I'm like, when that guy become my boy?
Like you own a share of that team.
So Maz, you've always been a guy who kind of like also did his own thing in his own way. At a time, you know, after 9/11, this comedy show that you had put together, the Axis of Evil, started before 9/11.
Yeah, we started in 2000. Mitzi put us together. In all honesty, I never would have thought about doing a tour of any kind, like anything. And the good thing about it was it helped us all become kind of headliners without having to go through all that opening, middling, all that stuff.
Yeah, which is both good and bad, but that's for another time.
Yeah.
Because I think if you don't go on the road as a feature, you sometimes you got to watch headliners learn headliner tricks, but that's a different story.
Yeah, definitely.
But you have this amazing crowd that just loves you, and it's everywhere you go, they come out in flocks, and you invented this hilarious character, Jimmy Vestfood.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a funny character. And you had done a bunch of stuff with him. But then you decide, hey, I'm going to write my own movie. And you actually raised enough money. And you just recently shot it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny. The basics, I think, in any place in life, not just in this business, is like if you can create your own opportunities, do it.
Yes.
Because very rarely is someone going to come pluck you and say, hey, you're going to be the next star. Or, you know, hey, you're going to be the next guy who's going to have the hot website or whatever. You got to put in the time. Be passionate about it. Go for it. If nothing else, even if you fail, at least you failed doing what you love doing.
Yes.
And trying what you – and even – I honestly think if you really love it, you won't fail because you will continue – like the guy that called earlier about the dog thing that kept shutting him down, he kept coming back with new titles.
Yes.
So that's what the mentality is, and I think
– would you headline Tits for Pits if they called
sure.
you?
Sure.
What about Nipples and Pibbles?
Nipples? Nah, I'm not about that
nah,
one.
That one.
Yeah, draw a line.
Relax.
At the areola. Once you pass the areola –
too specific.
You're on
content.
Your own, buddy.
So you are.
So I did. So this movie I wrote. This movie called Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero, which is like basically like the Persian Pink Panther, and I'm talking Pink Panther, Peter Sellers, not right. Steve Martin, Pink Panther, and you know, bumbling idiot, and it's this guy who wins the green card lottery in Iran to come to America. And he's always been a big fan of Steve McQueen's. Not the director, the actor. There's a lot of things I got to clarify now because the kids don't know who's who anymore.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Steve McQueen, the iconic actor. This guy's been a big fan of his, wants to come to America and be an American hero because he wants to be like a cop. And so he's in Iran, and it starts out, he gets this, he opens his mailbox, and there's a letter that says, congratulations, you won the green card lottery. And so he yells up to his mother, who's up, you know, who he lives with. He goes, hey, Mom, we won the green card lottery. We're going to America. And then he's like, I'm going to America. And he starts dancing in the streets of Tehran. He's like, I'm going to America. I'm going to America. He starts dancing. As he's dancing, the neighbors start dancing with him. Like, he's going to America. As that's happening, one of the neighbors runs over with an American flag and hands it to him. So now he's got an American flag in the streets of Tehran. And he's dancing. He goes, I'm going to America. As he's doing that, one of the other neighbors like tickles him a little bit because they're having a good time. And he drops the flag. And the flag falls into a puddle. He picks the flag up, starts dancing again, the American flag. I'm going to America. And then he goes, is that gasoline? He smells. The puddle had been gasoline. We follow the puddle, and it goes to this guy's car that's broken down on the side of the street. And this guy's fixing his car, and there's a jerry can right there. And the guy looks up and sees these guys dancing. He's kind of a curmudgeon, so he's got a cigarette in his mouth. So he flicks the cigarette, and in slow motion, the cigarette goes in the sky, catches the flag. Now the flag's on fire.
Oh.
This guy's a bumbling idiot. He's like, so he throws a flag on the ground. The people around him are going, he's going to America. He's stomping on the flag to put the fire out. And then people bring out their video cameras. They're like, hey, he's going to America. And then it's like quick cut, flash cut, snap, whatever, quick cut to Fox News. But we're calling it Cox News. And there's a guy who's like, we found this footage online. This guy's coming to America. We don't know who he is. And he's a total bumbling. He's not a terrorist at all. But so then that's how the movie starts. And then
he's
from there
clumsy.
You go. He's just clumsy.
Monster Brian, I could have you on forever.
Let's do it, Tripoli.
We got to have you back on. I could talk to you for hours hours.
You and I, we go on, baby.
Well, we're coming to the end of our hour. Real quickly, where can they check out your stuff?
They can hit me at Maz Jobrani on Twitter. Also, my special, I Come in Peace, just came out on Amazon and iTunes. Check that out. Also, go to MazJobrani.com. I got many ways you can get it. Facebook.com/MazJobrani.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming. You're one of my favorite people. What's
thank
up?
You, Trips.
And you're also on All Things Comedy.
All right, these comedy, the, yeah, yeah, of
oh,
course. Yeah.
You're one of the hosts of the Minivan Men.
Minivan Men, baby.
I love it. All right. So we're at the end of our – thanks for coming on, Mom. We still have, we're at the end of our – one of our. Are we doing toast on this one or next hour?
Oh, we could do it right now.
Or do you want to do it next hour?
Oh, I drank mine.
Yeah, I've been drinking it the whole
time. All
right,
we'll go next hour
apple.
On it since we're running out. Real quick, what do you got? Any dates?
Yeah, I will be at Side Splitters in Tampa with Steve Byrne this weekend.
Oh, you love that place.
Yep.
All right. Anybody in I was going to give them all shout outs to do something. You guys want to give a quick shout out? Do you got anything coming up?
Dirty Cakes Band, where can they check out your
DirtyCakesBand.bandcamp.com. We're meeting with some record labels this week. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Is you got any events coming up?
We're doing a record release. The big thing is NAMM in January. So, yeah, record next month. Big stuff. I'm excited. 10,000 on Twitter.
Congratulations.
Nice.
That's congratulations, Charlie. Is anybody in the booth got anything they want to push? Anything? Sapphire.
Come and download my show, Erotic City Radio / My Dirty Hobbies with Sapphire. I know it's the same time as the roast.
It's okay.
On Ustream, but if you want to go back and forth, flip back and forth, Erotic City Radio / My Dirty Hobbies, check me out. Also, Miss Radio Sapphire on Twitter. We got some big shit coming for
January. I'm sure you do. You're awesome. You're awesome. All right. Well, we got tomorrow night. Check us out. It's the Naughty Roast of Santa Claus. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Your feedback has been great. We greatly appreciate everybody listening and helping spread the word. I will be in Las Vegas January 8th, 16th for the Naughty Show at the Hard Rock during the AVNs. I got a couple other dates. I can't remember them right now. Check it out. Thank you, everybody, for your feedback on iTunes and everything. And do we have anything else to push?
Go to naughtyshow.net. And if you go on iTunes and you give us a 5-star review, email that review to naughtyshowpodcast@gmail.com. And we will mail you out a signed postcard.
All right.
Thank you, Illuminati. You
know, very thankful for everybody tuning in. Things have been going great. I love the show. And we got big plans for next year. So, cool. I think we'll go out a little early. How about that one? Is that okay? Can we do that? Are we allowed to? All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you on the other side.
I was hot and fuego.
Oh, yes.